Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And Chris is Skyping in today.
Hi.
He's on Baby Watch.
Yes. 2012.
Baby Watch 2012, yeah.
Yeah, the wife had a couple of contractions today, so decided to play it safe and stay home.
Yeah. Okay.
And then ignore her in the other room.
That's showing your sensitivity.
Did you hear some water splashing? Yeah. Do you have like a little string on your hand or something that she'll tug if she needs you?
Oh, I'm pretty sure the door will explode open. Let's go.
Are you all packed?
Yep, all packed and ready to go.
Yeah. So when you pack, you only pack her things, or do you got something for yourself as well?
No, I won't be staying there over for the time, so I'll just be going for the delivery. So nothing for me.
Oh, are you going to be in the delivery room?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Hmm.
Yes.
Not sure I want to do that. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, really? It's like they were asking me about it, like whether I want to cut the umbilical cord or not, and I was never really interested in it, but it's kind of like, you know, it's something that you only would have one chance to do, and I might regret not doing it later on, so.
Scissors or teeth?
Sorry. Machete.
Machete, yeah. I don't think I'd get a choice. I think I'd be told whether or not I'm in the delivery room.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm all for feminine mystique.
Yeah, well, no, I was thinking like during.
When he's not. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, during the actual birth itself, I'm going to stay way over by your head. I saw that video in health class. I don't need to see that again. You told me a lot of those stories before, and I wish I didn't know.
Despite me telling you to stop, you just kept on going, didn't you?
Well, despite doing two episodes on Apocalypse, we still didn't get everything we wanted to talk about in those two episodes. So we're going to kick off this episode, continuing on from that discussion.
The world can end, but we can't.
So one thing that I thought that we didn't mention that we should have mentioned, and this is similar to what we talked about in our Animals episode, is the kind of mythology that you can build. You know, you can only look at Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, or even like something like Fred Saberhagen's Book of Lost Swords, where something happened and they have stories about what happened, but, you know, it's unclear. Mm-hmm. So that can really help to dress up the mundane. In the Book of Lost Swords, they're talking about this like magical light. And it takes you a while, but you finally figure out it's like, it's actually just a flashlight.
Mm.
Somebody found this artifact, this flashlight, and yeah, in that world, it's pretty special.
And it still works.
Yeah. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Nuclear flashlight.
Yeah, Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome wasn't a good movie, you know, by any means, but
I
mean, it wasn't terrible, right? It wasn't terrible. By some means, it was okay. But yeah, my favorite part in that movie is when he's dealing with the kids and, you know, they're relaying the story of how they got out of the city, and it's, you know, the viewer, you know exactly what they're talking about, but they don't, and they've kind of built up this whole kind of, you know, mythology around, you know, the flying machine, and they have that little viewer they pass around, which is, I forget what those little things are called, you know, but no, I just thought that part was really cool.
Yeah, I always figure, like, if you're playing GMing Apocalypse game, then you should really try to avoid any kind of modern terminology in it. So instead of saying, like, you're an apartment building, then you could just describe how it's this big monolithic structure, seems to be made out of rock. And that way you can let the players build their own images of it. You know, worst case, you'll get, maybe they'll just sigh and say, oh, yeah, it's an apartment building. But maybe they won't, and they'll later on say, oh, cool, it's an apartment building or something like that.
I guess that came up from the last time we ran our Apocalypse game. And mm-hmm. running that game, I was a little bit confused about whether I should do that or not, personally, because, yeah. I don't know, like, if you're Generation Zero, or maybe Generation One from the Apocalypse, it's not like you would lose all knowledge, right? You probably would have been told what a car was, or what buildings were, or what these things were, even if they're slightly skewed. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, the farther you get away from that Generation Zero, then the more that information would get lost.
Yeah.
So... I wasn't sure whether to describe things to the players as an audience and just say it's an apartment building, you know, a concrete apartment building, or to kind of go, you know, that mystique route and describe what it looks like, but not really what it is, you know.
Yeah, I think we're referring to the same episode there.
Yeah.
But I was actually thinking specifically of there was a mine in the game. And I think, like, even at a first generation after an apocalypse, the people might not know what a mine is just because there's not really books or movies to show it, and it's not such a common thing. But I don't know, I could see, I think on the one hand, being able to say, yeah, it's a mine is a really handy shortcut for a game master, because then you all have the same expectations about what it is. But on the other hand, you can lose a lot of the mystique that you might otherwise gain from that situation.
Yeah. And when you talk about cities, I mean, not only are you talking about what cities are in a normal sense, but then also what cities became during the apocalypse and then moved on to post-apocalypse. So you kind of like all of these different stories, like maybe they were death traps. So that becomes part of a city mythology. And that's why people are afraid to go into the cities, because not necessarily what cities are normally, but what they became.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe they still are like that. Maybe they're not or whatever. So there's certainly a lot to play with. And again, just like in the animals episode, is like a slight shift in perspective can really help to, you know, make the ordinary extraordinary. And I think that was just something that we missed when we were talking about why we were excited about a post-apocalyptic game, because it always gets back to taking what's real and making it your own.
Yeah.
And it's just like when we do Pantheon Pandemoniums, I mean, there's all these like rich mythologies already there, and you can either take that wholesale or you can dress it up and make it your own. And just like, yeah, the world's pretty exciting in many, you know, modern society's really exciting.
Yeah.
But we're just used to it. So just shift the perspective a bit. And then what we're just so accustomed to, like these roads and highways, suddenly become like these concrete rivers.
Yeah, my advice for anyone, I guess, GMing that would be during downtime in the game, think about what's around the players in that setting and come up with ways to describe it without kind of saying what it is, and maybe write those down or at least have some idea of how you're going to describe it to the players, because that's pretty difficult to come up with on the fly.
Yeah, and especially because if you aren't taking the shortcut of being able to say what it is, the onus is on you to describe more about it.
Right.
Yeah, I know you're not a fan of box text, Wayne, but it certainly can help set a scene.
Yeah.
Like even if you want to open every session with a little bit of box text, describing something new that they've seen, but in an unusual way.
No, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I think that's a good use of box text.
But now it's time to get a little serious for a special episode, a very special episode of Idle Red Hams.
I was thinking
taking down a notch here.
I was thinking that
we have Blossom with us today.
They had a very special Idle Red Hams.
Yeah.
This comes from a game that's out there by Soda Pop Miniatures, and the game is called Tentacle Bento. And Wayne found it, so he's going to explain the game to us. But what we decided to do is we're going to discuss this game, and we're going to talk about sexism in gaming, which is probably not going to be a big revelation considering the title of this episode. So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to, at the end of the episode, we're also going to talk about how to use sexism, or I guess, avoid sexism in your actual games. All right, so Wayne, you're the one that found Tentacle Bento, and if you just give us a little bit of a background and your thoughts on the game.
Yeah, sure. So the way I found out about Tentacle Bento was through my Twitter feed. Somebody retweeted, this Kickstarter thing should be canceled. And so, of course, I went and checked out the link, and it's a card game based, well, I mean, essentially...
Get it out, Wayne.
All right. I was trying to do it without being biased.
We're all friends here.
It's a card game based on the anime trope of tentacle rape, essentially, is the way I saw it. For people who don't know Kickstarter, there's usually a brief description from the project creator saying what this project is, and usually an accompanying video. And both the video and the little blurb on the page said, the players are alien tentacle monsters who are disguised as Japanese female university students infiltrating an all-girls university to, you know, essentially kidnap girls.
Okay.
And the terms they used were kind of, you know, it's a satire, and in the long-standing tradition of horrible things when tentacle monsters meet schoolgirls, ... So, yeah, there was a lot of uproar about it, and Kickstarter canceled it, despite the fact that it was well over 100% funded. Yeah.
But Soda Pop Miniatures is still going ahead with this game.
It's done. It's made. It's fully funded.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, they made much more money, especially after Kickstarter canceled it.
It's maybe like 200, possibly even 300% funded.
All right, but you've actually been on the forums talking to people about it. I guess the Soda Pop Miniature forums?
Yes.
People who aren't familiar with Soda Pop Miniatures, they make a game called...
Super Dungeon Explorer.
Right, which is like a Hero Quest, except they kind of look like anime characters.
Right. Supposedly they're based on kind of the old school 16-bit Japanese RPGs from the 80s, which is why the characters are all kind of small and cute-esque looking.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a line of sort of card-based miniature combat in an anime universe they've created.
Okay.
So they're very much about anime.
All right, so you've gone on the forums, their forums, I guess.
Yes.
And you've been talking with some people on there about Tentacle Bento.
I saw on their forum that someone had started a thread that said, my problem with Tentacle Bento. And the person listed why they thought the game was objectionable. A couple people responded, and then I put up my response with my reasons of why I thought the game was pretty objectionable as well. And I think, I'm not going to say I got shouted down.
Because it's on a forum and people don't actually speak.
Yeah, exactly. All right, funny guy. No one.
I got capitalized down.
You know, they didn't do the internet equivalent of shouting me down.
Okay.
But they pretty much said I was wrong. And lots of people chimed in to say that there's no depiction of rape in this game.
Okay.
It's not implied. The fact that you are attributing rape to this game means you have the problem, not the game makers.
So what did they think the tentacle monsters were doing with these schoolgirls? And we should say that although they're attending an all-girls university, they seem to be wearing high school girl uniforms.
Which was one of the problems with the game that I listed on the forums.
That's one of those like dodges that I suppose you see a lot in pornography where to avoid the incest, then it's a stepmother.
Right.
Or to avoid the child pornography. Yeah, let's put them in a university, but we'll dress them up like people under 18.
Right, and that's exactly what I said. I said, okay, Soda Pop Miniatures has said it's an all-girls university.
It looks like an all-girls high school.
Exactly, you know, because the vast majority of universities here do not have uniforms in that style.
I don't think any of them do.
No. While the vast, very vast majority of high schools do.
Yes.
So I see that as you're telling us one thing, but you're showing us something very different.
Right. So, back to my question.
Right.
What did the people think that these tentacle monsters were doing with these, let's call it what it is, high school girls?
Nobody has explicitly said what they believe these tentacle monsters to be doing.
No.
I've gotten responses such as, it's all your imagination. They can be doing whatever you want.
Tentacle monsters don't speak.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're not going to have a conversation.
And that's exactly my point. You know?
And they exist to shove their tentacles into orifices. So it's kind of limited what they can do.
Yes.
You guys and your stereotyping of tentacle monsters, I tell you what.
Yeah, okay, yes. Yeah. For all the tentacle monsters out there, we're apologizing. You know what?
But tentacle monsters also don't have ears, so they're not listening. So.
Hey, but they do have hearts.
Those tentacles are. They could be hearing devices as well.
If only I could through the internet.
Perhaps that's how they communicate.
Yeah.
No.
So they haven't said anything. So
they haven't said.
Now, we did watch a few videos from one of the creators, or at least one of the presidents.
You might want to clarify that. We watched a video describing the Tentacle Bento game by the creators. By saying we watched a couple videos, having just... sounded like we watched videos... air quote, educational purposes.
Yes. Okay. We watched an interview with, I forget what the, who the interviewer is and what his affiliation is.
Right.
But he was interviewing one of the founders of Soda Pop Miniatures, I believe the president of the company. Yeah. And he demos the game and he also just talks about Soda Pop Miniatures in general. And a couple of things stood out for me. For you in particular, I think you've linked one of those videos on our forums.
Yes.
Was his use of snatch action with smirking and what was the other pun he did?
Okay, so I guess basically the game works. It's kind of like a rummy game, right? You have four different suits of girls and you score points by playing a student card, a location card, and a snatch card, which allows you to, quote unquote, I guess, grab the woman, because that's what, I mean, there are other meanings to the word, but that's what snatch means to me, right? You're catching something.
Right. So there's also another meaning.
There's also another meaning. So they did not choose that word by accident.
Yeah. What was the other one?
Well, in the video, the snatch action card that he plays is cram session. Yeah. So the line he uses is, and this is not verbatim, something along the lines of, we're going to take poor Sydney here, drag her into the empty classroom, and have a cram session.
And then he kind of like laughs or smirks.
Or sort of bites his lip in kind of a suggestive way.
And then the interviewer is like,
Yeah. And
the interviewer got it.
Yeah, the interviewer got it. Oh, I certainly got it, you know. And something else I learned, you can capture more than one girl at a time if you match all these symbols.
Okay.
And if you capture like three girls at a time, it's called a noble snatch. And if you only capture one, it's called a sloppy snatch. So, again, they're not choosing these things by accident.
I don't get the noble thing, though.
Neither do I, but it just kind of contrast with the
like
other
a sloppy.
One. Yeah. So, I'm the one with the problem for assuming that there's something sexual in this game.
Yeah. Well, what I found interesting in the other video was that he was talking about how they were trying to get women into the hobby. Mm-hmm. And he was contrasting.
This is definitely not the way.
Well, no, that's our opinion.
I'm just going to go out on a limb there and say that. But.
Well, he's contrasting it with like Warhammer and Privateer Press, saying it's like a lot of blood and guts. And
yeah, grimdark, like grimdark.
But apparently rape has no blood. You know, I don't know.
Well, not if it's not her first time.
Not if she eventually starts to like it. Yeah, I don't know what... I didn't see really the rationale. Okay, I can understand you try to make something appealing towards women, of course, right. So they buy the game and you open up the market a bit. And maybe that's the rationale behind their dungeon game. But I don't see something built around tentacle rape as being fairly attractive to women.
Right. Mm-hmm. Neither do I.
Or a lot of people, actually. I find it is a kind of a very narrow market, a very niche market, I think.
I think someone on a different...
And a lot of those people wouldn't be able to get that card game in prison.
Since most of the girls on the cards are underage, they probably wouldn't be able to go near the cards anyway. Now, one of the things I saw kind of on another forum where someone else said that, you know what, Warhammer and War Machine, yeah, okay, you can argue that they're violent, they're all about sort of combat and killing, but they do not target a specific group of people to express that violence against, right? They pretty much said everybody is fighting everybody else. There's not really any bias to who they're fighting. Here in this game, the only people you capture are women.
Right.
So you are definitely kind of biased. These actions are directed towards one group of people.
Yeah, actually, the pornography in Japan that is directed towards women isn't the tentacle rape pornography.
Oddly enough,
yeah. That's actually targets men, as you can imagine. The one that targets women is a boy-on-boy love. Mm,
yeah.
Bishonen? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's correct. Bishonen.
Yeah, Bishonen. Thanks, Chris.
No worries.
to the point where you could actually go in, they'll have like a store dedicated to just only selling that manga. I don't know if they make anime as well. I do know they make comic books. So if you were actually looking to create a card game that was going to attract women that uses Japanese pornography, then you could do the boy-on-boy love.
Yeah.
Or you could have the tentacle monsters raping schoolboys.
Right.
Because at least that's one step closer to, I'm guessing, like the female audience in general would like. Yeah.
Well, yeah, at least it's equal opportunity that way. Equal opportunity tentacle rape.
I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but when you watch something like Spartacus, the TV series Spartacus, there is a lot of gratuitous nudity. But everybody's nude in it.
Yeah. It's not only the women.
Yeah, I mean, you're watching Spartacus, and there are, like, minutes where... Where you're thinking, it's like, wow, you know, my wife sees me watching this. She might think I'm gay or something.
I better start playing Tentacle Benno again. She'll get the wrong idea.
Hurry and get some women walking under the screen. Yeah, I think it is. It's like, you got beautiful women, and then they're like, well, and we got beautiful men. And you know something? Like, a slave is a slave. It's and that's the way it is.
Wear
you
no
know,
clothes. It's like,
yeah, they're going to use the men. They're going to use the women because they're slaves. And I'm not saying Spartacus is a historically accurate representation of Rome, but certainly equal opportunity there. And you can't say that there's – I mean, if you're looking at something that's going to offer something to both men and women, you're like, hey, how about Spartacus? You maybe say it's a bit bloody or something like that. I don't know. I guess women don't like violence, or they do. I don't know. But they certainly got their pick of gladiators to look at, and then the male audience or the lesbian audience.
If you like men, they got men. If you like women, they got women. How's that?
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever you want, we got it.
I guess we were being too heterosexual there.
But that was actually... I didn't bring up the Spartacus point, but that was one of the points I brought up sort of arguing against this, because apparently the game is supposed to be satire.
Right.
And that does not come across to me. I don't see anything satirical about this game. I see it as simulating the genre.
Yeah, it's simulation.
Right, exactly. And I said, if you reverse the genders, if you had female tentacle monsters invading an all-boys school, that to me would be satire. Because you've taken what the usual gender roles would be and swapped them in an effort to show how ridiculous the genre is. And I got called a hypocrite because apparently... I don't know, because that seems kind of baffling to me. But that's what people argued against me. So.
And some people have said it was a cultural thing.
Mm.
You know, it's, I don't know, respecting is maybe the wrong word, but Japanese culture.
Paying homage.
Yeah.
We got to mind, there's a lot of great things about Japan, but, you know, it's not a perfect country, just like, you know, Canada and the States aren't perfect countries. Where this is a country that has a rape section in every porn store,
mm-hmm.
or even in...
We've done our research about that.
Yeah. And it's not like it's lost in translation. The actual mm-hmm. word is in the characters that they use for loan words, and it's rape. So it's not, it's pretty clear what they intend. And the storylines are based around rape.
Yeah.
So there is that. I mean, that, and that's something that you certainly won't find in Canada, which I think it has a slightly stricter mm-hmm. Pornography laws in the United States, in that you can't show violence against women.
Right.
Yeah.
In pornography. So I'm sure Tentacle Bento would be able to be sold in Canada just because there's no nudity.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no nudity, and from the pictures I've seen, I've not seen all 108 cards because the game hasn't been published yet. I've only seen concept sketches, and one of the big supporters' argument is there is no depiction of rape or sexual activity on these cards.
Oh, well done. That's
so, yeah.
I saw a comment on one of the forums that was discussing it, and he says, you know, it's true that it doesn't actually show any of it, but the way that it's set up, there's just a big rape-shaped hole in this game, and it's not hard to guess what they're going for.
Exactly. Yeah. I saw that argument, too, and it's a really good one. Like, if you show this picture, right?
Yeah.
And there's imagine like a landscape picture, and there's a dog-shaped hole in this painting. Whose fault is it that the viewer thinks dog? The viewer, because they're looking at a hole that's shaped like a dog and jumping to the conclusion that there was a dog there, or the person who created it knowingly creating this dog-shaped hole on the
page. Oh, but that's art. There is no dog.
All right. That's very zen.
Sorry.
Yeah. So in Tentacle Bento, there is no rape. Very zen.
That's
yeah.
not very zen at all.
No, it isn't.
No.
Well, a couple of things, from my opinion. Well, first, one of the things about Japanese rape is you said in Canada that they have laws against showing violent sexual situations. I don't know if it's important or not, but it's very little of the Japanese rape videos that I know of are violent. Most of them are just non-consensual sex. Now, you could say, of course, that there is an element of violence and all that, but it's more like groping on the trains or something like that.
There is a lot of that. And actually, that's another good point, is that in Japan, on the trains, because of a problem with groping, there are women's only cars on the train.
Lyle, I'm so glad you backed me up on saying it, because I think I was sounding like a Japanese rape video expert for a minute there.
Yeah.
Well, we're not saying you're not.
Yeah, we were kind of looking at each other, because there are videos where there is a fair degree of violence shown.
Okay.
But I'm sure, like, rape is a subgenre that probably has subgenres.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sure there's something for everybody who likes rape.
Yeah.
In this subgenre.
Yeah, I was just kind of unsure of how to respond, because I'm sure a lot of people would say that rape itself is violent. So to say that it's a non-violent rape, I don't really think you can say that.
No, well, no, that's a fair point. I'm just sorry.
Yeah,
I'm trying to
I was just trying to explain my silence.
I don't even know. Is there such a thing as hard rape software? I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't even talk.
You know, I don't want to find out. I don't want to find out. Let's quit while we're ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but actually, you know what? It's interesting what you guys said, because when I looked at this, I actually did think satire at first.
Can I ask why?
Well, when I was looking at it, obviously, the cards do hint very strongly at rape. There's nothing big about that. But I didn't get it as to where they were kind of promoting the idea of rape or softening the crime of rape, as a lot of people are complaining about online. I saw it more as that they were satirizing, but maybe you guys chose a better word, in simulating this genre of anime. So even though there's no argument that it's completely tasteless what they did, I actually don't really fault Soda Pop. I don't think they went into it with intention to create something horrible. I think they really just wanted to make a satire or an homage to a genre of anime that a lot of fans know and laugh about.
No, I'd agree with your use of the word homage. And of course, we're not saying that a company is... Well, I'm not saying that the company is promoting rape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not... It's not... This is not a recent thing. But I do wonder about the desensitization that violent video games have on kids, and what pornography has on primarily men. Men are still the primary consumers of pornography.
Yeah.
But that's just a broader broader issue, but they're certainly cashing in on a genre that perhaps does not need to be cashed in on. There are softer forms of Japanese pornography in which they could have built the game around. Again, if they were trying to get more women into the hobby, and this, I think, could have really had a lot of potential for satire, was the boy on boy love, mm-hmm. or even the I forget this name, where the women dress up like men.
Oh yeah,
not. But it's kind of, I think it's a porn genre or also a pop genre as well, where they'll dress up like schoolboys.
Right.
And there's something with that. And there's a lot of, like, kind of the swapping of the gender roles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's also the, it's probably regular anime and manga as well, but it's also part of the pornography where the actual main character, main protagonist, switches genders. Mm. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll get, like, a trigger, like, they'll get aroused and suddenly they'll become a girl.
Right.
Yeah.
And then almost like the, like a non-violent Incredible Hulk, you know? And like there's a lot of stuff that you can't play with. Obviously they're trying to cash in, and I thought it was a little bit disingenuous, and perhaps I'm connecting two separate interviews and combining them because they both came out about the same time. I think it was a little bit disingenuous to talk about how you're trying to attract women into the hobby and then this is one of your products. I think they have three products and one of them is based around tentacle rape,
right?
When there's a lot of anime that they could have used as the basis for this game.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the guys that are buying this probably just want the cheesecake pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build cheesecake pictures on something with a less offensive theme. Yeah, the company, I would say, in all likelihood, is doesn't agree that people should be raped.
Hmm.
I think that's a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah.
And the Isle of Red Hands are, of course, 100% against rape.
Yep. No, of course.
Just want to make that certain.
I don't care if we lose any listeners over that.
No, I don't disagree. I'm sure they're not trying to promote rape.
I think it's tacky.
Yeah.
It's, I think that's the main thing. And watching that video, I think that watching the interviewer's reaction to that and watching the way the president was kind of maybe a little bit too in love with his little inside jokes.
Right.
Probably not a group of guys that I want to sit around a gaming table with.
Yeah.
And play any game, maybe. But especially not that game.
Yeah, I think...
I think I could get really tiresome. I like Jim Rummy. Yeah. But you know something with Jim Rummy? I can use regular cards to play that game.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, like, watching the video on how to play, that's all it seems. It seems like it's only Jim Rummy with porno cards.
Yeah.
Anime porno cards. And...
Hey, dude, leave the cards on the table. Don't
yeah,
take
exactly.
them in the bathroom.
Exactly. Oh, that didn't even... leaving the cards on the table. Please remind me. The way Kickstarter works, you have different levels of pledges, of money you contribute. And the person who sets up the project can have kind of, I guess, bonus prizes for these different levels, right? You contribute $10, you get a pre-order copy of the game. You contribute $20, you get, I don't know, like a holofoil sticker along with it. So one of the pledge levels that Soda Pop Miniatures had was at the $500 level, you could have, and they listed this, you could have your wife or girlfriend illustrated as one of the students on the cards, which really kind of creeped me out.
Again, that it doesn't really bother me. I think rape was pretty far from their minds when they created this. I think the tentacle anime genre was primarily the thing.
No, but I mean, it's one and the same, Chris.
I'm going to disagree with it, yeah.
I'm not saying that they're promoting rape,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think you can then say that rape was pretty far from their minds when that's the whole
tentacle genre
rape.
No,
is there another tentacle genre that you're thinking of?
Of course not, no.
No.
It's, I don't know, it's... To me, this game seems ill-conceived and, as you said, very tacky. But I don't know. I see it rather as being innocently naive in the creation of it. So in that viewpoint, then, the idea of offering a card where you can have a wife or a girlfriend on the card, it's, again, that same kind of innocent naivete.
Okay, so not to put you on the spot here, and we can cut this out, would you want your wife illustrated on one of those cards?
Oh, hell
because
no.
Because I would not want my girlfriend illustrated on one of those cards. I don't know. I don't see how you can defend it as naively innocent, but not want someone you know illustrated on one of those cards.
No, I totally understand Chris's answer. Even when you ask the question, it's like, Chris actually doesn't want the game.
No, okay. Yeah.
So he doesn't want the game. He doesn't seem particularly care for the game. So, of course, he's not going to want his wife.
Yeah, okay.
I would have liked it if, you know, you contribute $500, but you're gay or something, and or you're a woman. You're like, well, I want my husband.
Well, yeah.
Or my boyfriend.
The way they worded it was your wife or girlfriend, and then another one said wife, girlfriend, or SO for significant other. Or they said, like, or you, But the implication was definitely for if you're a woman and you contributed to this and you want to be illustrated on the card.
No, but if they said not, significant other, then maybe you could have said, I want my husband.
And I don't think they would have done it because it's a girls only school and all the students have to be female.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
There's also the thing is, and we've talked about the filter, and then sometimes an ocean can be an amazing filter, even with the internet. And, you know, you get a lot of international products, but like people have a great respect in North America for Japanese comic books and Japanese
I did before I came animation. Over here.
But when you're here, you actually see that there's a lot of garbage.
Yeah. And he doesn't mean trash on the ground. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of poor quality stuff.
Actually, a lot of comic books are on the ground.
Yeah, because exactly. People
they'll buy them just to read on the train and then chuck them out. Mm. And they're produced on a very poor quality
paper.
They're
almost like pulp novels.
Yeah, they're like pulp novels. And the stories aren't all that innovative. I mean, they're different from superhero comics. Mm. And you could say, well, superhero comics is always the same story. But believe us, in Japan, a lot of the comics are all the same story.
Yeah.
And they have their own tropes. They just happen to have slightly different tropes. Mm.
But, and it's interesting, a lot of the tropes that have become really popular in the U.S. or in the Western world are not that popular here.
We don't just want to talk about this game, though. We want to talk about sexism in general, in particular related to, like, games and toys. There was a recent article in Wizards of the Coast where one of the art designers or art directors was talking about whether or not certain pieces of art are sexist. There's been a lot of talk about Lego's new toy line geared towards girls. And Wayne, you saw a video that one person put up about that in particular?
Yeah, I believe the website is called Feminist Frequency. And it's this woman who does like a 10 to 20 minute video about kind of, you know, sexism and I guess feminist ideas in games. And the one I watched was a two-part on Lego that she did where she kind of looked at that new Lego Friends line.
So she's saying it's sexist?
Maybe sexist is kind of a strong word. Maybe gender biased or kind
of. Okay. All right. Yeah.
I prefer that, I think. So anyway, yeah, the three big things was the building of the toy isn't sort of an active process in the commercials they've presented for this product. The other thing is the color palette for everything in this town they've made is traditional girls' colors, pink, purple. And the other big one was the fact that the figures look kind of like miniature Barbie dolls as opposed to the normal, very iconic Lego minifig.
It doesn't seem like a smoking gun to me.
Okay.
No.
You know, actually, I read an article on this as well quite a while ago, and it was about some of the people who were working at Lego. I think it was a psychologist, but I'm not entirely sure on that. But they're talking about how and why they built this new Friends the way they did. And they were saying that Lego was going downhill pretty badly a while back because they kept introducing like all different new kinds of sets, but they weren't getting much traction with it. And eventually they got the idea that for boys, they figured out that boys concentrated really well on building a specific item. For example, like a Star Wars ship or a building or something like that. And it worked very well with the way that young boys develop. But they had very little success with young girls. And they found that young girls didn't have as much patience towards a specific goal. Instead, they would build things in spurts. So they wanted to design these kits that could be assembled one part at a time, like half of a house and then the other half of the house. They also said that girls have much a higher tendency to role play with their toys than boys do. So that's why that they redesigned the characters to look more human so that the girls would be able to adapt to them. And as far as the tones, they said that was simply for older girls who had already been socialized into liking pink and purple and whatnot more, just to help them buy into the product.
Well, they also said, I don't think I read the same article, but I did. This was a Lego spokesperson that said it's all market research. Mm-hmm. And one of them was when they tested it, they were saying they wanted more pastels and they wanted a different color palette.
Yeah.
So they were saying that, and they wanted, like Chris was saying, they wanted to interact more with it as opposed to build the environment.
Yeah.
They wanted more focus on interiors than exteriors.
Yeah.
So like in a case like that, I would think that, it's down to what is a gender roles. Hmm. You know,
yeah, it is very specifically gender biased, but it's not biased as to the way these people think girls should act. It was by studying how young girls do act and responding to that.
And I've seen this complaint come up with video games. And do video games depict women perfectly? No. You know, I had to watch my friend play Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball. He somehow thought bringing a single player game to a house of four guys was going to be a winner.
So, no, Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball, it may have been a winner.
Just watch me pick these bikinis. No, I think I'll leave the room now.
You want some alone time there?
Anyway, but it almost seems to be damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I don't disagree because they
made this woman who's very the protagonist, and she's very strong, but she's all got masculine characteristics, whatever they are. Or they made this one woman, but she's very different from men. They made her very feminine, whatever that is. You know, it's somehow people think that differences equals inequality. But that's not the case. I mean, are men and women the same? I mean, I personally don't think so. Yeah. So why should the toys that we play with, why should the toys that they play with be the same?
Yeah.
I guess for me personally, I see it as a chicken and the egg problem, right? Specifically talking about the Legos Friends thing. Is that what girls want? Eh, maybe. I don't know. Like, I didn't do the tests. But is that what girls want because that's what they want? Or kind of like Chris said, have they already been kind of socialized to want that kind of thing? I don't know.
But there is some crossover. Some guys like to play with dolls, and some girls like to play with more traditionally boy, like action figures, we'll say. I remember growing up, there was these three brothers, and the middle brother's name was Vincent. And he liked to play with the girls and play with dolls. And for whatever reason, you know, you talk about kids being cruel. We actually didn't make fun of the kid. And his brothers didn't seem to mind that he played with dolls. We would always invite him to play, but he never would. But the opportunity was there. He, you know, you kind of crossed the line. And the same could be said for the girls, as they could have come and played with our Shogun Warriors or our Star Wars action figures. I don't recall any segregation in that respect. But we did. I remember thinking as a kid, why would you want to play with dolls when you could play with Star Wars figures?
That are just smaller dolls.
Well, exactly. But you were also talking about how the Lego figures are different sizes, and there might be something to that. It's not like, or let's force young girls to play with larger size dolls. Like, what would be the rationale behind that? Maybe they like it. G.I. Joes used to be big, and then somebody like knocked them down, like Kenner with the Star Wars figures, and then they knocked all the action figures down to a smaller size. Maybe that's better for boys. I don't know.
Oh, that's
but I have a tendency to believe that it's largely socialization. I mean, pink used to be considered a boy's color before World War II, after all. So I'm actually specifically looking forward to these Legos because I'm going to have a daughter, and I know how good Legos are for children's brains. But like, I know that my daughter is going to love pink just because my wife has bought everything for the baby pink so far.
Could go the other way. She could hate it.
This is very true. And one of my best friends, young girls, she loves cars and trains and the color blue, you know.
But I'm saying with all the opportunities right now, I still think you're going to see a predominant division between the games and the toys that boys like to play with and the games and toys girls like to play with. It. For whatever reason, you know, I'm not a psychologist or a sociologist. It just seems to be the case, you know. And the guy in Lego was like, you know, if your daughter likes building things, we've got all that Lego. But the thing is, they don't want to sell to 50% of the kids. So if they have Lego City, and they probably did the research, and it's like, not enough girls are buying Lego. And I know girls don't buy it. The parents buy it for them. But were mothers like saying, no, my girl will never play with Lego? You know, there's no way she's going to build a hospital or a ferry. Mm-hmm. You know, or an airplane. I mean, it's there. It's always been there for them. Who's to say the Star Wars is they can't play with the Star Wars? Or we were talking about the ninjas.
Yeah, Ninjato, yeah.
Yeah, play with the ninjas, you know.
Why
is that? Because it gets into, well, why is that more attractive for boys?
Right.
Because Lego would have been more than happy if all these girls or the parents of all these girls bought them these ninja toys or whatever. But is that what girls were asking for? I want ninja toys.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. I just see it as now there are slightly more barriers to that cross-gender play by making the Lego Friends figures non-compatible with the traditional Lego minifigs.
Because they tested it, and the girls, I'm going to guess, the girls didn't want to play with these nondescript tiny little Lego guys.
Okay.
And girls.
So
Chris was saying, they wanted something that looked more human.
All right, fine. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but now I see is you can't, or not that you can't, but those two sets will look odd if you mix them.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. The girls and the boys, they're essentially playing with different toys now, and that does separate the genders. But specifically, Lego doesn't care if the kids are playing together as long as girls and boys are both buying Legos.
Yeah. And also, I mean, that also helps with the rollout. Yeah. As you're saying, oh, we're now adding these new sets to Lego City. That's not going to be as big of a story as like, hey, we have a whole new line of Lego. It looks different. It plays different. You know, and guess what? We're gearing it towards girls. And you can see that. And then people are going to talk about it. Some people are going to criticize it.
Me.
Some people are going to love it, you know. But it'll be like the bottom line. You know? Will it sell?
Yeah. And I'm very happy. I'm loving it. I can't wait.
Yeah.
It's not McDonald's, Chris.
No, I'm just, I don't actually like dolls very much for girls because all it is it's a doll. It doesn't do that much. I think that Legos are more interactive, more exciting, better for the brain.
You know something, Chris, maybe you're trying to shake, sorry. I don't want to critique you as a parent when you're not even a parent yet, but I mean, maybe you're kind of, you don't want to shape your kid, you know?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely
whatever
right.
She's going to be attracted to. I mean, I'm worried. I'm in a country of the Ultraman, and gosh, that's about the most boring toy alive.
Oh, yeah.
Ultraman toys. But,
well, they don't do anything.
My kid wants to play with Ultraman. I guess they're going to buy him Ultraman, you know?
Yeah, true.
Or you could do what my mom did.
Oh, yeah, she wouldn't buy you He-Man.
Actually, that was my brother, I think. Like, he's like, oh, I want to play with, He-Man. And like, so we got this generic knockoff brand, Sun Man, that was African-American.
He-Man, yeah.
My mom's like, no, He-Man is racist. He's like this Aryan guy, and, you know, all the bad guys kind of look ethnic. And I remember arguing, I'm like, Mom, Skeletor is a yellow skeleton. He's a skeleton. He's not a real person. You know, how is that racist? What, like, against the skeletons?
No.
She kind of relented eventually, but.
Yeah, I, as a kid, I mean, do you really want to shape, enforce your vision of the world on your kid? You're going to do it anyway because you're a parent.
Mm.
But sometimes you got to let the kids. I mean, guns. I played with guns as a kid, but no one like sat there for like months on months indoctrinating me into the world of guns. You know, I wasn't crying playing with guns when I first started.
I was laughing playing with guns.
I love it, Dad. I love it. Look at me killing this guy. I love it. No, I mean,
what are all these dead squirrels on the lawn?
I mean, for whatever reason, you wanted to do that. I don't know why, like, we attracted. But when we played guns, I don't recall. I think we had some girls would play with us, play guns with us, but it was predominantly boys.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I'm not going to change anybody's mind, and I don't know. I see the Lego thing as kind of weird. All right, not weird, but.
And we're talking about weirdness and toys.
Yeah, again. Weirdness and toys. But, like, there's been a definite shift in the Lego City set to more combat-oriented sets, such as like the introduction of Cops and Robbers.
Yeah.
So, like, are boys attracted to more combat-oriented story?
I called them dinky cars when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we still call them that. Matchbox cars?
Okay, matchbox cars, yeah.
And I loved those dinky cars. But you know something? I look back at them, like, what did I do with them? You know, I just kind of like
pushed them around.
Pushed them around. They don't interact.
Mm.
I mean, they're cars. You know, so I was like, I like people. So what did I really get out of these cars? But, I don't know. Kids are kids, you know?
Yeah.
You were going to say kids are dumb.
parents bought me cars,
Yeah.
Because I wanted them,
I guess.
I guess so. Maybe they would.
That's what you got to do. You got to let your kid go with what they're interested in. I remember when I started role-playing, it was during the big scare when everybody thought D&D was Satanism and sacrificing your friends and stuff. But my parents let me, so it was good. Yeah, actually, I remember my mom being very concerned about it. Like, she was asking me, like, what do you do in these games? Is there something weird or religious about it? And I was like, no, it's just a game.
Jack chick comic, hadn't she?
Yeah. My dad, she might have, actually. I remember getting the feeling that she was actually worried about me, but she did let me play in the end, so.
My dad asked if we played Snakes and Ladders. And kind of had that look, and it's like, nerd. That was about it. He was the guy, like, we go to the dance, and you'd be too shy to ask girls to dance. So he'd always joke, and he goes, oh, you guys go to the stand? But if we bring this kind of idea of gender roles or gender bias to games, is there a bias in role-playing games? Is there something about role-playing games that excludes women? Is there something about role-playing games that accounts for the fact that it's still primarily a predominantly male hobby?
That's kind of a difficult question. The games themselves, I would probably say no.
Okay.
The culture around them, maybe I would say yes.
Okay. Well, hold that thought. Chris, what about you?
Well, actually, I wouldn't really be able to venture a guess as to why it's still a primarily male-dominated thing. Because, I just don't know enough about the society and such about why that happens. But as far as the games themselves are concerned, I think that there's two different parts to it. One is the art that they depict, and the second is the actual games and the writing of the rules. I think that the art can often be very sexist, but the games themselves often try very hard not to be, even going as far as to put in full sections explaining why they use he as the predominant pronoun.
Can I ask about what you said about art? What's sexist about the art? Because that gets into the column that was from Wizards of the Coast, because they showed how the tiefling, I believe, warlock,
yeah, something
was depicted.
Yeah,
and
to be honest,
she was scantily clad.
Mm-hmm.
You would call it sexy Arabian, I guess, would be the closest. Yeah. It looked like a...
Okay, yeah. Oh, I thought it looked like a slit skirt.
Oh, was that it?
It was a slit
okay.
skirt.
It was. She had the one Angelina Jolie leg sticking out.
Oh, emaciated?
No, it just as in fully exposed.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Wayne, you had the much stronger opinion on that picture.
I guess I did, in that... I don't know if I had like a... Yeah, I did have a strong opinion because it was... I thought it was kind of sexist. I mean, it was the kind of standard fantasy fare that's mm-hmm. in books. You know, a female magic user. Okay, she doesn't need armor. She's not really going to be fighting. So that means we can dress her pretty scantily.
What about the sorcerer in 3rd edition and 3.5 D&D? It's almost like, I wouldn't say bondage gear, but a lot of leather straps.
Mm-hmm.
It's a man.
Yeah.
He's attractive because they wanted to emphasize that a sorcerer is very charismatic. Mm. So he is a handsome dude and not wearing a whole lot of clothing.
Yeah, that could just be...
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, when you look at just the famous art from Frank Frazetta.
Oh, yeah, Frank Frazetta, yeah.
Oh, Frank Frazetta. Yeah. And is it a little... I guess you could say it's a bit cheesecake, but there's also beefcake on there as well.
Right.
And I guess it gets back into Spartacus. If they're both being depicted as these supremely attractive and scantily clad individuals, it's you could say it's sexy
right.
or sexual, but maybe you can't say it's sexist. And I actually agree, maybe not everything in the article, but I certainly agree with the one thing or the one point that the art director raised, and that people tend to want to see attractive people, you know?
Yeah, I certainly don't disagree with that. And I mean, I kind of used to be an artist, and yeah, you kind of draw attractive stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just like going back to what we said with Lego. I mean, that sells.
Yeah, I guess we're like, I don't have a problem with the Frank Frazetta stuff because, as Lyle said, it's similar to Spartacus where both genders are being depicted as kind of sexy, and it's kind of equal. I guess where you get into the problem of potentially being sexist is, especially with D&D and other kind of fantasy games, if the male warrior, you know, or the fighter type looks like, yeah, he's a fighter. Look at all that armor on him, and it's practical, and he is built for combat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a female representation, and you have the skank male, as they call it, where there's more exposed skin than metal.
But do they do that anymore? Because if I remember correctly, the depiction of like the paladin, they made that a female, and it was decent armor.
The art in 3E and 3.5 was really good because it showed, like you were saying, with the paladin, I think with the maybe it was the ranger as well, but it was, they were both women, but they weren't overtly sexual in any way. But 4E has kind of gone back a little bit. I think on the cover of the book they have that one. Well, she looks almost like an Arabic woman, but she's got the exposed midriff and chest, and like the tops of her legs are bare.
Yeah, well, if you want to get into like ridiculousness with 4E, why does a female dragonborn have breasts?
That's you a know? Very good point, yeah.
All right, sorry, I guess I wasn't specifically saying that D&D has done this, right? Mm. What I'm saying is you get into problems of potentially being sexist if you have art of that style.
For me, it's actually the chainmail bikini, and that may be a bit extreme, but the rather sexy armor, it doesn't really bother me all that much. The thing that's more is depicting women or men in too specific of a role, you know, like the woman who always needs help, the princess to be saved or something.
Right. And, but do they do that anymore?
No, I can't remember seeing something like that recently.
I forget where I read it, but I actually did read an article that sort of went through D&D art over the editions and kind of tried to categorize them as, you know, how much skin they were showing, whether the pose they were in was sort of dominant, submissive, or neutral.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you see the thing with the, sorry to cut you off, yeah, with the Avengers movie poster?
Yeah, but I thought I showed that to you.
Oh, okay. Then you did see it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I believe I'm the one who showed it to you.
All right.
No, and I think that's a good point. Like, if you look at the Avengers movie poster, right, all the male heroes are kind of depicted in poses of action where they kind of look like they would be, I'm not going to say threatening, but they look like they could...
They're more frontal.
Yeah, exactly. They're more frontal, where Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow is in the typical... My back is kind of towards you, but I'm going to rotate more torso so that you can see both my breasts and my butt.
Yeah.
And people have, you know, criticized that pose. So somebody did a really well illustrated parody of that and said, if all the Avengers were posed like Scarlett Johansson. And that was pretty funny. And not to go way back to the beginning, but that's satire because it's saying this is ridiculous because the gender roles have been reversed.
They shone a light on it. And then you look at Captain America in that pose, you're like, that looks strange, you know. But why does it look strange? Because, you know, that's a nice looking guy, you know.
He's showing off his ass to me.
Yeah, and he's in a form-fitting costume. You know, all that justification that you might have made before, but you're like, oh, but there was that subtle difference. He was never posed
in that way.
But now you pose him in that way, and I'm like, yeah, I guess they shouldn't have had her in that pose.
Yeah, he looks.
She's an equal member of the team, or she's not.
Yeah, and yeah, you have to not make that choice, but that's what that poster says.
Sorry, Wayne, you were talking about the different editions and how it progressed, the amount of skin, John.
Yeah, and they said that, or the conclusions, and I mean, I don't know how scientific it was, right? And it's kind of one of those, how do you quantify, I guess, the amount of skin showing, or how do you quantify whether something is sort of sexy or dominant or submissive? It's a very, you have a lot of gray area, right? But generally, they found that the majority of women are depicted in either neutral or submissive poses, not dominant or active ones, and the majority, not majority, but there's still a large number of more scantily clad women than men.
What about vampire?
Vampires
now,
are just...
Anecdotal evidence, sorry, Chris.
No, go on.
Is that it attracted more women to the hobby. There's something about vampires and women. I mean, you can only look at Twilight. Wow, I'm just doing the generalizations there. There's just something about vampires that the women, can't get enough of.
Shocking.
Sorry. But, and the art there, I would say that it's more overtly sexual than a game like Dungeons and Dragons or GURPS.
Yeah.
Get it generic.
Yeah.
Right. I suppose those crickets are what, you know, I'm hearing from the listeners as well. But still, if I would do the comparison of the art, I'm not knocking Dungeons and Dragons. Mm. I'm not knocking Vampire. But I would say that the women were still slightly more sexual poses and states of undress.
But, you know, for me, that's totally okay, because Vampire is a much more sexual game.
Okay, because I'm a sexist.
Yeah, but did you hear the follow-up was that I would say if you did the same kind of comparison between the men, the male and female images that was done with D&D, I think you'd probably still get where the women would be slightly in more sexual poses or situations or whatever. I don't think I'm articulating that very well.
No, but I know what you're saying, and I don't disagree. I think you probably would get the same results with art in Vampire that you did with D&D.
Right. You make it seem so easy, Wayne, that sentence.
Well, yeah, for me, Vampire, it's okay for both men and women to be depicted more sexually in Vampire because it is a more sexual game, in my mind.
And I don't disagree with that either, and that's exactly what I was going to say. I haven't done research on it, but why Vampire could potentially or would potentially attract more women than, say, D&D, I think... And this is just my own idea here, right? Possibly because vampires in the White Wolf setting are so much better than human mortals. There's a small number of them. And I guess, like, in D&D, especially for you, like, the characters are much better than mortals. But they still kind of have to operate in society, right? They still kind of have to operate in the real world. And, like, there's vampire society in Vampire, obviously. But then there's also the mortal world, which vampires are so much better than. They're not a part of. So this is, I don't want this to sound, I don't know,
crass
or dumb, but vampire characters, even female vampire characters, have a large amount of dominance over a large male population. So
it's like wish fulfillment?
I don't know if it's wish fulfillment, but it's at least a chance for them to say, I'm not in a position where I'm going to be sort of subservient or secondary or, you know, sort of not downtrodden, but I'm not at a lower level than anybody else. I'm now at a higher level than a large percent of the population in this game.
All right. Well, I mean, role-playing is wish fulfillment. Do you think the fact that certain games, games that don't have classes, would that be more attractive? Because, like you said, like certain classes might have some gender baggage, we'll say, or a certain gender bias applied to a particular class, like an occupation.
Right.
We talk about some male occupations and female occupations, and the same with the class. Whereas if you take a system like Vampire, or a generic system, where you build whatever you want...
Not really. I don't really see that as being a big barrier for men versus women. But, you know, this might sound like a cop-out, but I'm not a girl. It's just hard for me to say.
Yeah, like, I kind of agree with Chris. Like, there certainly are... jobs have kind of gender baggage, so I'm sure that certain classes kind of have gender baggage. Again, is it more?
You know what it is.
I don't agree with that at all, Wayne.
What?
I don't agree with that at all, Wayne. Especially in role playing, saying that certain classes have gender baggage. I think when it comes down to actually playing a man or a woman in a game, role playing tabletop games are some of the fairest things around. There's usually no difference between the stats and the abilities of a man versus a woman, regardless of what class they are. I can just as easily see a female fighter as a male fighter, a male magician, female magician, whatever.
Okay, so the rules themselves are not gender biased. I agree.
But then if you're talking about the players, and that can change per person or per group.
Exactly, but if you look at, I guess, traditional fantasy, which, you know, D&D is kind of based on, and someone creating a game is going to look to, you know, fantasy media for inspiration for their games, right? Whether, you know, subconsciously or directly. And if kind of the standard bias is still male-dominated kingdoms or settings or whatever, then I don't really think it matters.
But that's not the fault of the game. That's the fault of the person who's choosing to draw from that fiction.
Well, I don't think anybody's assigning fault here.
Exactly. But I still disagree with the point that that roles and classes in games have gender baggage. I don't see that.
I'm not saying that necessarily that it's keeping the way. I was just putting forth the question, but I'm going to disagree because, I mean, you could say with a role-playing game, first off, you should probably said, I mean, it's your imagination. Whatever limits you put on your imagination are your own limits.
Right.
It's not the fault of the game or society. But that said, if you were to have a party where you have a very strong female character, and by strong, I mean physically strong, and perhaps even like where they're, or maybe even they're the main protagonist. I mean, there's still a female being a protagonist is still rarer than a male being a protagonist in certain types of stories. And then you had a very physically weak male. Perhaps he's the wizard or whatever. Perhaps he's very sexy, you know, and perhaps he uses his wiles. I mean, James Bond is very charming, but he's also very physically tough. Mm-hmm. There are certainly attractive male protagonists, but we want it all, you know, so to speak.
We want a Hugh Jackman.
We want a Han Solo. We want an Indiana Jones. Sure, they're attractive, but they also can do all the physical stuff as well. And there's nothing wrong with having that, but I think there is that certain everybody would subconsciously or consciously, maybe it would be unspoken, but acknowledging that they're kind of subverting the roles.
Yeah, I think
they're reversing them a bit.
Yeah, I think you explained it kind of well. Like, if you had, like, an adventuring party, would someone remark if there was a male fighter lead? Probably not. Would someone remark if there was, like, a female fighter lead? I tend to think yes.
Hmm. Or if they don't, they probably won't remark, and because they don't want to look like they're sexist or somebody to think something. But, if, like, say if somebody said, well, I built this character based on the Templars. Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, kind of like a monk. Yeah, kind of like a monk. Yeah. Oh, I'm a woman. And you're like, oh, okay. Great.
Wasn't really expecting that.
Yeah. So is the monastic order all women? Yeah, it's all women. You know, and that's fine. You know, you've done that. You've separated it because we don't have a lot of the actual real examples. We have Joan of Arc, but we don't have a lot of examples from medieval history or Roman history or Greek history of women warriors. We have some. It did happen, you know.
Yeah, not none, but.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think, that's why I would say that the rules themselves aren't gender biased, but because of the history and popular media, the worlds that Cole created will either sort of subconsciously or otherwise be gender biased.
But you know something? Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I agree. There is a dearth of female role models, especially for fighters in history and, I suppose, medieval fantasy and whatnot. But I don't know. For me, I still don't see that as being a big hurdle to jump over for this. But
it's not a hurdle per se. You know, I mean, we're not saying it is a hurdle. It's just like it gets back into the Lego. It's like if your daughter likes to build ships and airplanes, then buy her ships and airplanes.
Yeah.
Because that's what she likes. Like nothing's – it's not like – they need a special pass to get into that section of the toy store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do girls predominantly prefer this? You know, this type. Why did Lego have to make a special toy line to try to attract more girls?
Yeah, true.
You know, I don't know. But just to get back into the history, don't ignore it. Use it. You could do a lot of the what-if questions when you're making a world. I mean, there are examples of matriarchal societies. I mean, you could actually seek them out and compare them to a patriarchal society and compare what was different about them. Or just imagine it yourself and maybe play with the stereotypes a bit. You know, men are like this, women are like that. So if women were in charge of ancient Rome or women were in charge in a medieval society, the society would change slightly. It would be like this. And I think, again, that would make something that's ordinary or usual and unusual or extraordinary because you're playing with things and you're actually using real examples. I mean, the more reality you can put into your fantasy world or your science fiction world, I think the richer it's going to be, the more you have to draw from. And that's where sometimes cliches and stereotypes can actually help you.
Yeah, if you kind of, I guess, flip them around.
Right. So like that research that you were using, Chris, or you were referencing for the Lego is like, oh, we did this research like girls like this and boys like that. And whether or not you agree with it or disagree with it, you can use it as long as it's not necessarily offensive, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like this society doesn't have mathematics because math is hard.
Oh,
you know, something like that. I can see. Yeah. That ain't going to go over well.
If you have an all-male gaming group. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Now, we touched on history, and we talked about this in regards to, like, racism, and even in a pulp game, which should be just a lot of, it's like a cotton candy game, you know, it's a lot of fun, but there was, like, whether or not to have a black protagonist or the black man, the black leader of the pulp group, and it was set in the 1930s, but you wanted to set it into a real 1930s. We had something set in the 1960s and another pulp game, more hard-boiled.
Right.
But we wanted it to be as real and as raw as possible. So if you want to have something, a very realistic medieval setting, and by realistic, not like inverting the roles or anything, but actually having is like, you know, if your king has a daughter, she can't succeed.
Yeah.
If you won't inherit the throne, like what could you do with that? I mean, yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of heavy stuff, but you don't really have to like go out and champion this stuff as like a gamer. But I would just say be aware of what kind of image you're presenting. Because basically the way I see it, for the hobby to survive, it has to become more inclusive. So just be aware of how you're presenting it is all I would say.
No, I think that's good. I think maybe the problem with stereotypes is not so much the women's female stereotypes, but actually the gamer stereotype. And right or wrong, it is that it is exclusionary and perhaps a bit immature and a little socially stunted. And if you're sitting around with a game like with the high school girls, high school girls on cards with tentacle monsters and using phrases like cram session and snatch action and
slippery when wet
and giggling about it. And imagine like a group of women or just a mixed group of maybe casual gamers were to walk by, that would really turn them off. I would imagine they don't know that perhaps that you like to play all of these like really deep role-playing games that, you know, where there are no hurdles, there are no boundaries on your imagination, and you can do whatever you want, any type of story. It's really just theater around a table. They don't know that. They're looking at guys, you know,
giggling
laughing.
About, yeah, these cards.
Laughing at these cards, and that's what it is. And maybe that's why, I think that's more the biggest reason why I reacted to Tentacle Bento, is because it was reinforcing a gamer stereotype that I'd rather not be there. I'd rather the hobby be more inclusive, and I just don't see that as the way to go. I just see that as driving people away.
Now, that's exactly what I told my girlfriend. I said, this is the kind of game that makes me embarrassed to tell people, especially here in Japan, that I am a gamer. Because they'll immediately assume that that is the kind of game that I play. And it's not. So, yeah, I kind of see it as perpetuating that negative gamer stereotype.
You guys summed it up really well. I agree. But thankfully, I think that as time has gone on, as I've played through my life, it's the situation seems to be changing. I see a lot more women gamers, at least on the internet and through the blogosphere, than I had before. So I got a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah, me too, because people did react to it. And maybe 20 years ago, people wouldn't have.
Yeah, exactly. There was an outcry against this game lacking sensitivity. So.
And some of the reaction you would see on the forums, at least Wayne's experience on their forums, I mean, that's their territory.
Yeah,
You're going to circle the wagons a bit and get a little bit defensive, and that's understandable. I would just hope that they maybe look at maybe some of the comments they were making on those forums and think that if somebody were to just kind of like a lurker, as they call them, a guest, and they were looking at, oh, what kind of company is this and what kind of game is this, and they'll look at those comments and they're going to make judgments that's going to affect the kind of people that are going to be around your table. And you probably want as diverse a group as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of goes back to be aware of how you're presenting yourself and at least make an attempt to be inclusive.
Yeah.
I guess the more I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And preachy, like we've been before.
Exactly.
Well, apologies if this did come across as a bit preachy. We were interested in the subject and wanted to talk about it. So next episode, we promise we'll
go back to something male-dominated warriors.
Yeah, we're going to do something light, another Warriors episode, which we postponed for this one. So we'll go back to death, violence, destruction.
Enough of that rape. Let's get back to killing.
Yeah, something light. Anyway.
Cool. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website through DriveThruRPG. You can download it there through iTunes or on Stitcher. Check us out with our forums. You can post there or follow us on Twitter or on the website. Whew, it's getting longer and longer every time. Anyway, send a mail to us, talk to us, listen to us. And it's all fun. Bye.
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 DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill.
Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
There was an article recently. Take seven. Fuck, fuck, fuck. We don't just want to talk about this game.
Or do we?
I'm done.